Welcome to Stage Talk, a weekly conversation about the performing arts. I'm Steve Hunt, your host. Today we'll be talking about Shakespeare, and in particular one of his most popular shows, A Midsummer Night's Dream, as being produced, currently performing at the Wendy Williamson Auditorium on the campus of UAA, TBA Theater's production of this classic tale. And we have royalty in the studio today. We have the king and queen of the fairies. We have Wayne Mitchell, who's playing the part of Oberon. Welcome to the show, Wayne.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be back.
And we have Dana Mitchell, who's playing the part of Titania. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
This is, you know, one of Shakespeare's most popular and often done shows. And it's done often because of a reason. It's a fun show to do. And you can do it in so many different ways. It's so open to different ways of doing it. And I understand TBA Theater is doing it in a kind of a 1920s ragtime flavor. Is that something you guys can talk about?
Yeah, we're doing it 1920s style. Each group has got their own unique style from the 1920s, but it's really raucous, really beautiful, really fun. The sets, the costumes, everything is 1920s, reminiscent of the 1920s, and just gorgeous. So the court is the flapper style. The fairies are more the Follies style, like Ziegfeld Follies style, and then the mechanicals who do the play within the play look a bit like a vaudeville troupe. And then the set is Art Deco, beautiful. It's just an incredible, beautiful production. Sound, everything.
Well, it's, you know, you mentioned that one of the attractive properties of the show is how many ways that you can do it. Because Shakespeare wrote it, obviously, in the Renaissance, but then he set it in sort of an amorphous Greece that never happened.
Exactly, Greek characters.
And then you have these occasional Celtic gods that wander through. And so,
and the mechanicals are more English.
Are more English. They're very English, in fact. And so it's a difficult show to pin down. So of all of Shakespeare's, it really is one of those ones that's attractive to try something new with and fun with. And as Dana was alluding to, we didn't lock ourselves into a particular type of 20s. It's very much 20s inspired. And again, it's a 20s fantasy. It's a 20s that never was.
Well, there's an anachronism to the whole play itself. And so you're sort of tying into that. It doesn't tie into one particular time stamp of the 20s, if that's the right way of
exactly.
saying that.
Exactly. Well, and that's, I think, the beauty of it. And when Dana was talking about the beauty of the show, it really is quite, quite beautiful. And a lot of it is that you're not locked into, it's got to be this song by this date to match this costume. It's more magical.
Well, speaking of songs, I know people often add music to the show. Is there music? Is there original music? Are you tying in some other 20s type of music to the show?
Yes, we certainly are. We've got both traditional 20s music and a few original pieces. Lucy Peckham is our sound designer, and if you're familiar with Lucy, nonpareil.
She's been doing quite a lot of work lately around town. She was with Perseverance's production.
She was just wrapped
an Iliad.
Iliad, correct. And so she's wonderful and has done tremendous work on it. And the undercurrent, the underscoring of the whole sound of the show is, again, 20s inspired, but magical. It's a fantasy 20s.
Yeah, nothing that you would specifically recognize from the 20s, but you can tell that that's where you're at.
Well, Dana, you mentioned each group, and if you don't know this play, there are several different sort of stories that go on to play. There's the marriage of
Theseus
and there's the four young lovers who go off into the woods, and there's Bottom and the mechanicals. All these different groups are sort of stylized in a different way. How does that influence the production, or was there a reason for doing them in certain ways, or is it just sort of just to have some fun with it?
I think you're trying to establish an identity for each of the storylines and bring them together in a cohesive group. So as you mentioned, you've got everybody's coming together for the marriage of Duke Theseus and Hippolyta. And so they have their own group in their court, and they live in one particular world and one particular storyline. But then they're influenced by or have influence over the other couple of groups that you mentioned. There's the lovers, and then the fairy group. And so in order to establish a cohesiveness and their own identity, they each have a bit of their own style.
And it feels Downton Abbey-ish to me, you know, because you've got the court that is so elegant and so beautiful and so perfect. And then you have this tiered society. And then additional to Downton Abbey, of course, then you've got this fairy society, which exists next to but not part of the real world.
And even in the fair society, you've got the same sort of...
The same tearing.
The same
tearing. Again.
Right,
correct.
Yeah. And you've got a lot of mischievous characters in this play as well, I'm sure.
We've done something interesting with Puck. I don't want to give much away, but come see the show. We've done something interesting with Puck.
Oh, don't stop there. You have to give us something.
And, no. All will be made clear for the price of admission.
Puck is quite magical, we could say that.
Yes, quite magical. And a thing that Erin Dagan is the director of this, that she added is Oberon has a train. It's very popular to see Titania, the Queen of the Fairies, that has her fairies that are named in the play by Shakespeare. But there's really only one allusion by Shakespeare to Oberon the King having fairies as well, that they enter with their own trains when we first see them meet at the top of Act Two, Shakespeare's Act Two. And then they just kind of go away, and we don't know what happens to them, but not in Erin's play. In Erin's play, they stay with me, so I've got this troop of thugs that we call them the imps, and it's a world of fun and adds a real dimension to it.
Interesting. So it's so fun to play with Shakespeare that way, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, Shakespeare's the kind of playwright who, if he doesn't say not to do something, you have full rein to do anything you want to.
Kind of. I'm not aware that he's ever come back from the dead and complained to anyone about it.
And Dana, you have your court as well as Titania, right?
Yes.
And how is that? I guess you have the fairies all around you and beautiful costumes.
They're so fun. Oh, beautiful costumes.
Ridiculously beautiful, oh my word.
Wayne mentioned that they're named. So we have Peas Blossom, Cobweb, Moth, and Mustard Seed. And so they're all costumed to reflect this name, this character that they might develop. They only have a couple of lines, but each one has developed a distinct personality, a distinct way of moving, of interacting with me and with everyone else, and they're gorgeous.
Well, gosh, it sounds great. For those of you just tuning in, this is Stage Talk. Our guests are Wayne and Dana Mitchell, who are here performing, talking about the performances and TBA's production of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. So, Wayne, you're about to say something, and I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, not at all. I was just going to kind of seize on what Dana was talking about there. Often when you get a production this size, you can get weak at the edges. It gets a little frayed at the edges in terms of your talent pool, commitment to the show, and things of this nature. This cast is remarkable. All the way out to the edges, everybody is thoroughly realized, thoroughly committed. I mentioned the imps earlier. They don't have lines, and yet they're some of the most committed actors, totally focused and a ball to be with. And because they are that way, they brought so much additional to the show.
I know what you're saying. Years ago, I performed as Peter Quint in this show.
Oh, what a great role.
It was a great role.
That's Will Kemp's role.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. But what I found, and this is not necessarily your production, but we had our own little gang. And I found that different groups in the play sort of had their own sort of identity as a gang, not a gang in a violent way, but just these are your homeboys, your homegirls.
Right. Well, they're the people that you're sharing the stage with,
exactly,
and spend the most time with. It's interesting because when we finally came together to rehearse the show from beginning to end, the rehearsal process involved a lot of groups meeting based on who was in a scene with whom. And when we finally all came together, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, right, you're in this show too.
You're in the play.
Good to see you.
Hey, man.
And the last scene, of course, during the wedding, I won't give anything away. For those who haven't seen the show, there's a wonderful performance by the Mechanicals. And everybody is sort of there and having a lot of fun with that. So everything kind of comes together at the end of the play. Are you bringing in the fairies at all towards that, or is that something you can't talk about?
It's very interesting. Often, as you mentioned, people will edit Shakespeare and stuff for time. And there is a scene after the wedding where the fairies come in and bless the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often cut, and they go straight to Puck's final monologue after the wedding. You know, lovers to bed, it's fairy time, and et cetera. And Erin has insisted in keeping the whole show together. And maybe I'm prejudiced because I'm playing Oberon, but I love that it's in there. It's just so, so beautiful. We don't attend the wedding as such, but we do come in and have that scene as written by Shakespeare. And we have a wonderful time with it.
We haven't talked too much about the young lovers. How is that being portrayed in the show?
Sometimes
it can be very, well, sexy. Sometimes it can be very slapstick.
Veers more to the slapstick.
It's slap
it's both.
Sexy.
Yeah.
Slapstick. Slap sexy.
I don't know how to there's no clean way to say this. We're on the radio. But we thoroughly commit to this being a comedy. But it is a very lush comedy.
Yes.
And that's
sure. Shudder.
Look. Well, that's what makes this place so wonderful, I think, when you have that from all these different worlds together, the mechanicals, which are just, you know, fun and stupid, the young lovers who are very much in lust and in love with each other.
And behaving and the behaving way young way. Lovers would, sneaking away to the woods, you know?
Right.
So when it's not as sensual, there was a film version done back in the 90s with Michelle Pfeiffer and Rupert Everett and Stanley Tucci, and they really cranked up the sexuality of it, which I think might be a mistake. Shakespeare is not made of marble, as we sometimes think reading him in literature class. He is very earthy, but I don't think that's an invitation to make absolutely every aspect of the play a sex joke, and we don't. We back way, way off of that, but we also don't avoid it either. We try to address the material as the material.
And really embrace the comedy.
And the comedy. The other thing that we do is, you know, I struggled. I played Oberon once before, and I was horrible at it. And part of it was that I was playing a king and a king of fairies, and I really kind of stunk.
And it's nice to have an actor admit that they were.
Oh, man. Well, you're greeny, you're growing.
Yeah.
And so looking back at it and looking at it now, one of the things that I thought is, well, no, this is a comedy. We have to commit to every aspect of it being funny. And it is. So as you pointed out, the mechanicals in their play is...
It's side-splitting.
Wickedly
hilarious.
Funny.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But I think the whole show is funny.
There can be a temptation, I think, to do Shakespeare and take it very seriously. And this is just... No matter that it's 600 years old and has 600-year-old language, it's hilarious. In all parts, there are moments of hilarity. And we've had no trouble finding that.
Well, and it speaks to all audiences we found. We had somebody post on our Facebook group, this is what happens when you take your children to see Shakespeare. They were up till 5 in the morning designing costumes. And so there's pictures of all these costumes that they'd been up and designing. And these were 6 and 7 year old girls that had come to see it.
I think they were 10 year old, but we have a 7 year old who was on his third or fourth time seeing it and sitting through beginning to end.
Wow, that sounds great. Well, I wanted to get to your relationship. We have about 15 seconds left. Your relationship as the queen and king of the fairies. I know that's sort of part of the play. Is there something that happens with that?
Well, it's fun. Dana and I obviously are married in real life, and this is like the third time in years, 12 yeah. years, that we've got to be real couples on stage. And I think that dynamic shows. The play begins with everything is in disorder and chaos because these forces, these fairy king and queen, are arguing. And it comes into harmony when they come into harmony. And gosh, I think a real relationship speaks to that.
Well, people have got to come see this show. Again, TBA Theater's production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, performing currently at the Wendy Williamson Auditorium on the campus of UAA. Great talking to you guys. If you want to hear more about this show, see some photographs from it, and also other shows playing in the area, go to alaskapublic.org, click on our calendar. And until next time, I'm Steve Hunt for KSKA.
Stage Talk is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Stage Talk and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.